I support the Second Amendment. I purchased a gun when I was a young man. I've been a hunter pretty much all my life.
Can I get me a hunting license here?
I'm not a big game hunter. I made it very clear. I've always been, if you will, a rodent and rabbit hunter, all right? Small varmints, if you will.
You better say your prayers, you flea-bitten varmint!
Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi. 95.9 WATD.
Back on Monday Night Talk, we want to thank again to a gentleman who came in. And it's tough when it's a half an hour. I mean, to do a forum.
That was only half an hour?
It was only half an hour.
Yeah, it is tough.
It kind of crept into your territory.
That's okay. I'm happy to. It's democracy.
I know you're good with being a former journalist, a gentleman who had something to do with a newspaper. That's gold we were spending.
Especially that's my town, Hanson. So, as much time as we need for Hanson.
Part of your district, of course. State Rep. Jeff Deal. Josh Cutler. Josh Cutler for the 6th Plymouth District, which is Duxbury, Pembroke.
And Hanson.
So there you have it. And I had to break the news to Josh because we actually were going to have a very special guest joining us tonight. And because he was traveling during that time, Bob Hayes wasn't the special guest. Bob Hayes was a given.
I'm just hanging out.
Bob is kind of the assistant,
Assistant to the assistant?
To the assistant.
He's under me.
Everybody's under you, Joe. But Drew Bledsoe.
But Joe has to promise not to tell the story about when I saw him on Saturday morning.
I was going to say something.
It's okay. You know what? Go ahead. I'll tell the story just to get it out
Please
of the way.
Please do so.
Okay.
No, it was actually a great event, and it was actually dealing with something that's here at ATD.
It was actually. And it was appropriate to talk about it. The Talking Information Center had an awards celebration to recognize some of the great volunteers that they've had over the years, and Joe was there representing Senator Headland, and Jim Cantwell was there, and I was there. We had a resident, Ann Collins of Duxbury, who was being acknowledged for, I believe, 25 years of serving and reading to the blind, which is amazing.
Mm. It is amazing.
And so, of course, the funny part of the story is that I had opening day for youth baseball over in Duxbury. I coached my son's little T-ball team.
Yeah, Charlie's already playing baseball.
He is, yeah. Wow. 6 years old.
Where's Delilah in this? Was she like a cheerleader?
On the sidelines, kind of running around. So, I'm in my baseball garb, and, game finished around, 10 or 10:30, and I wanted to make sure I got to the TIC, because, I didn't want to just leave the citation and have someone else present it. And so I rushed over, but I didn't have time to change, so I was there in my, baseball uniform, hat, shorts, and looking kind of disheveled, and I entered this room, and everyone's in suits and ties and looking formal. Joe's in
decked out
in a full suit. Cantwell shows up. He's in a suit. And so I had to sort of explain
it's
gotta
to
the
be
folks.
Special if Joe dressed up.
Yeah.
Because otherwise he's just...
Wow.
Joe looked sharp.
Joe always looks sharp, but whenever I see Joe, Joe's wearing all his NASCAR stuff. So that's when I know Joe.
If I was more witty, I'd come up with something, but I can't think of anything right now because I'm so angry.
Oh.
Well, NASCAR is his natural...
That's your second garb, for crying out loud. When I first met you, you were wearing... What was it? What was the Oreo cookie jacket that one of the drivers
was
wearing?
It was the Wrangler jacket. It was one of my jackets. But yeah, so we had a great. It was a great event, and Josh, what you did miss out on though is the breakfast beforehand,
that was just as good.
Breakfast was delicious, but it was a great event, and it's really good to see. And the one thing I did remark at is how many volunteers. Like those people aren't paid,
right?
And
they
come in for nothing, and there were probably 80 to 100 mm-hmm. people there, and it was really just unbelievable.
It was. We should note Ron Bersani, who does such a tremendous job.
Absolutely,
running the show. He was recognized as well.
Yes,
and I would be amiss. We have our camera guy who's kind of popped in, and he's gonna from time to time he'll chime in. Jared Valenzuela, who actually is also, I believe he has a race tomorrow.
I'm
surprised he's not out on the street.
Yeah, what are you doing here, man?
doing a standout right now.
People of Rockland may have just heard my voice 10 minutes ago.
Really,
right, Mr. Rossi? I hope.
So are you the assistant to Joe as well?
I'm always the assistant to the assistant. Joe's the first assistant to Bob Headland. I might be the second or third.
Okay. See, I always thought you were the first or the second. I wasn't sure.
No, Joe's the first.
Is he really?
Joe has got to be number one.
No,
what am I
you're
number
really
one for? I zoned out when you started
first
talking.
Because we made you a compliment. That's the problem.
I'm sure there's a lot more that Josh would like to talk about.
Oh, absolutely.
No, not really. No,
just
Just kidding.
Well, you know, it's,
he kind of enjoyed the direction this has gone.
we're kind of odd enough, and I had, you know, had a little bit of a Freudian slip and said Jeff Diehl, but Jeff Diehl was on last week on the cusp of the House passing a budget. And I don't know if you want to talk about the House passing the budget and anything that either you're happy that you see pass or you have disappointment. Feel free,
sure,
in regards to any amendments that you might have put forth as a freshman.
Just
lawmaker.
I just bumped into Jeff as I was leaving the State House. Actually, had a nice chat. We've been doing some work in Hanson with the state auditor.
Yep.
Hanson and Whitman, of course, to try to target some unfunded mandates and see if we can help our school committee friends like Mr. Hayes here. So they were down at the Hanson Town Hall actually today. Did you meet with them, Bob?
Josh, I was going to congratulate you for that. Suzanne Bump is an old Whitman resident and a friend that I've known for years. Her dad owned a funeral home in town.
I did not know that.
And he was an icon. He really was. The whole family was very well known. And it was good to see her and good to have her come to Hanson. So I want to thank you for getting her to come to Hanson. But unfunded mandates is something that all school systems are dealing with. And they're very difficult to deal with because when the unfunded mandates come through, it's a budget changer. And every single school district sets a budget. As you know, school districts are coming forward to set their budget. And when it's set, and that's how you got her there, because I believe I saw you at a school committee meeting, and there was some unhappy school committee members giving you an earful.
That's
about
right.
What,
and hey, when I hear my unhappy school committee members, I make sure we take action. So
exactly.
So
I want to thank you for getting her down there, and you did it with light speed. And Jeff was there too, which was nice. So it was nice to speak to her and talk to her about what went on. It was good.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is that in we've done a lot of forums, and with the school committee forums that you hear on WATD, one of the questions that keeps coming up is how do you deal with unfunded mandates, because it's something that every school district has to deal with, and it's really becoming an issue.
Yeah, and absolutely. And so getting back to the budget, one of the it was exciting for me as, you know, as a freshman representative to go through the whole budget process, and you know, it's you know, you're there till about midnight.
Whenever that session gets done.
But you know, it's great to be part of the process and kind of, you know, representing your constituents. But one of the really neat things for me was getting to do my what's called my maiden speech. The first time you speak down in the well of the chamber, it's called your maiden speech. And usually, when you see on TV, you know, there's people speaking, and not everyone, to be honest, is always paying attention. I'm not telling any tales out of school there, I don't think. And but when you make your maiden speech, everyone comes and sits down and you know, gives you due attention. It's bipartisan. It doesn't matter what party you are. And so so you give your maiden speech, and then afterwards, sort of the legislature, you know, takes a quick break, and all of the membership comes down and offers congratulations. They shake hands and so forth. So it's kind of a nice tradition for the new members. A couple of my freshman colleagues gave their maiden speeches as well during the budget. I did mine on Wednesday night on the topic of Council on Aging grants. And so it was nice. I was a little nervous going in, but I thought it went pretty well, and I was very proud to be speaking on that topic. And I, you know, I think it was well received. And actually, I can say my amendment passed 154-0.
So. I was going
to
ask you that.
It's a good margin.
And what amendment was this?
This was regarding Council on Aging grants. There's a thing called the formula grants, and what's great about it is it provides a grant to every senior center. A Council on Aging or senior center in the Commonwealth, and it allows them to kind of do with it as they wish, however they can put that money best to use. The analogy I made during my speech was that our Councils on Aging are kind of like the MacGyvers of local government, in the sense that give them a little bit of twine, some rubber bands, and a little bit of funding, and they can really create some wonderful programming. And I think that's evident, you know, in Hanson. Mary Collins is going to use that money to hire a part-time outreach worker, so that, you know, seniors who are shut in or can't get to the senior center have someone to follow them. Over in Duxbury, we have a supportive day program for Alzheimer's patients that serves not just Duxbury, but the whole South Shore. These funds would allow them to expand that from 3 days to four, to also offer a scholarship program for senior citizens who can't afford it's got a fee base associated with it. So it's a formula grant that goes to every town, and each town can kind of curtail it to the way they best need and know to service their town. And it hadn't been increased since 2009, so it was due for an increase, and we were successful in making our case. And you know, it was really a team effort. And, you know, it's just great to be able to have a chance to speak on that and have it be victorious.
I have a question.
You're really getting good. I'm going to pull the microphone away from you in a minute, Joe. Co-host. Go ahead, ask the question.
Okay. Tomorrow being, and anyone else can answer this, tomorrow being the special election, who is your candidate for U.S. Senate?
Okay, you put me on the spot. Actually,
really?
I...
Yeah, what? Okay. It's a big deal. We got to talk about it.
Hey, you know, I didn't see Representative Cutler's name on that list of endorsements for Mr. Markey that perhaps was a bit inaccurate.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
A few of his colleagues were misrepresented by that list.
All right, go easy, guys. Go ahead.
No, we have two good Democratic candidates, and you know, I'm going to support the Democrat, whoever that is. I had folks in my district who were supporters of Lynch and supporters of Congressman Markey, and so I let the voters will decide. We have some good candidates on the Republican side too. I understand we're going to hear from one of them later today.
Yep.
Also, my colleague Dan Winslow, who a Republican state representative, who I've gotten to know a little bit, and I think he's a tremendously intelligent. Very smart guy. So we have some real good candidates on both sides. I'm going to let the voters decide. Frankly, I'm a little bit fatigued from the campaigning myself. I spent 3 years doing it, and now I just want to kind of do my job.
I want to go back to the budget. One of the things that we initially brought you in here to talk about was the bottle bill, and it's a bill that's been brought up a dozen times, and it seems as though it needs to be updated. But yet, it's never gotten that final push. It's never got that. Give me your thoughts on that.
Sure. For people that are listening in, Senator Hedlund has been one of the bigger advocates of that bill and is the Senate sponsor, I believe.
I drop his name all the time because as soon as people say, "Oh, that's just a Democrat issue," I say, no, not at all." Well, Senator Hedlund is one of the chief sponsors of that bill, and he's done a tremendous job on the Senate side. He actually got it up through the Senate for a vote. Last term, which was some major progress, so it's really not a partisan issue. I think it's just a common sense issue. We had a forum, was it last week or the week before? By now, ATD covered it as they always do with such a great job. We had one of the House sponsors of the bill come down, a gentleman from the Sierra Club, Phil Sego, and also Claire from the South Shore Recycling Cooperative come down, and they did a panel discussion. We had some great questions from the audience. We had a good crew, 40 or 50 folks over in Duxbury. And we had a real good discussion about it. It's been a frustration, I think, for folks that we're going on, 8-10 years, and we haven't been able to get it through for a vote, even though there are more co-sponsors, than there are representatives, almost. But I'm hopeful that this year, because of, we seem to be back on, at least on a little bit sounder footing economically, we're headed in the right direction, that's something we can try to address finally, because it's a common sense kind of measure.
I was gonna throw something in there, and that was
Joe and Kevin are fighting.
Yeah, I'm gonna backhand
him in a
minute.
I'm on the same side of the table tonight.
Yeah, so.
Joe's gonna be on the floor in a moment. Last year this bill almost passed, and it's something that Bob loves talking about, because we actually had a chance to talk to Josh when he was campaigning, and one of the favorite things that I've learned about Bob Hayes is that one of his pet peeves is bill bundling, and I believe that the bottle bill was part of a bundled package that didn't sneak through. Am I wrong here?
Definitely. No, you're not. You're not, okay. Kevin. The bill bundling, I almost wish, Josh, that you would put forward some legislation to stop the bill bundling. Forget the bottle bill.
Bob hates that.
I don't even want... I mean, the bottle bill is another whole issue, and I'm going to ask you in a minute, what's the opposition? Why would anybody be opposed to the bottle bill? But my question for that is, you and I have had this discussion.
Yes.
All of a sudden, at the end of the session, 180 bills get bundled together, and they all get voted in. No one has a chance to even read what they're just voting it. And it happens, and then you see it come out in the paper. How do you stop it?
Great question. You have a lot of, it's a parliamentary body, and so you have parliamentary tactics that get used, and you have all different kinds. You have, just in the budget, folks will file amendments that really have nothing to do with the budget. And, again, it's not Democrat or Republican. We have both parties doing it. And, people look at it as a way to, okay, the budget's definitely going to pass, so if I get my bill attached to the budget, it will pass.
And then a lot of times, and you can vouch for this, it's legislators trying to make promises to people that they've talked to by just putting it into wherever they can.
Sure. And I'll tell you, listen, I'll be the first one to say I'm guilty of it. I had an amendment to this budget that would have created a meals tax holiday on Sunday evenings during the summer months. I thought this was a good idea. It isn't, strictly speaking, part of the budget. But I looked at it as an opportunity to try to get my idea, not just my idea, it's other people's idea, advanced. And so that's what we did. So that happens. It's part of the process. It would be better if the budget was strictly, just financial matters. I think, not to defend it, but I think it's far better process than it is in Washington, D.C., where you have things just completely, you just meld it together. And
bills titled
totally
things
different.
That they don't even read.
Right. Yeah. Totally disparate things, farming and transportation. Or, so that sort of thing happens. So it's better. It's not what it should be. I agree with you, Bob. There's other different ways that that happens with the bundling. Things happen at the end of the session. So, you know, it's a legislature. It's a sausage-making factory, I suppose. And, you know, it doesn't always look pretty, although, you know, hopefully the results will be positive.
Where did the bottlers play a role in this? Because I would think there's been tons of money thrown at this to not get it, for it not to get far enough, because sure. They would have to pay some kind of, they'd have to pay into this in order to take, I mean, we got water bottles here that should be part of that system, sports drinks that should be a part of it, but yet folks don't want to.
Yeah, it's great. They, you know, the bottlers have been successful to some extent in making their case, and also, you know, in some quarters they've been successful in getting labeled as a tax. And as soon as you label something a tax, of course, you know, you get the sort of responses that you would think. And it's not a tax, and so that's why I credit Senator Hendlin, because you know it would be easy for him to say, "Oh, it's a tax, and I'm not going to support it." And he has been very vocal and forceful about saying it's, number one, it's not a tax; it's a fee, it's a deposit you get back. But unfortunately, I think some people just still cling to that idea.
Jared?
So we're going to switch gears with you, Representative. One of your colleagues from NADIC, well, it's a budget issue, talking about the Department of Transitional Assistance. He's his name's escaping me, but it's recently come out that one of the suspected bombers' families was on transitional assistance for many years, and a few news outlets have made public information requests to the extent of the monies they're receiving. And obviously being stonewalled by the administration, what's your feeling or position on that?
That's a very timely question, Jared, because actually I'm on the Post-Audit and Oversight Committee, and we actually today, this afternoon, had a hearing on this very topic, because our chairman, David Linsky, to his credit, he is the representative from NADIC, I'm trying to think of, has been very vocal that, you know, if there's some information that the public needs to know, I think we want to err on the side of getting that information out. And so he is, through our committee, because we have subpoena power. It's mm-hmm. the only committee that does in the House. He has subpoenaed or requested, I think they complied with our request, all the documents regarding this case from the DTA. We've also made requests of through Medicaid, federal agencies, any kind of public assistance programs. Today, we got, I believe at 11 o'clock this morning, we got about 300 pages of documents, and I think they sent about 200 on Friday. So we've got about 500 pages of documents. They just came in. I have not seen them. I believe our committee staff is currently looking through them. There's some legal issues that we're trying to grapple with, Jared, in terms of how we can release these, if we can release these, because there is it's chapter two, I believe it's 66A, that does put some restrictions on what we can do. But I can tell you that our chairman and our it was pretty, you know, universal Democrat Republican in our committee that we want to try to release these if we can. We don't want to put the legislature in a position of doing something that's, you know, it's illegal, obviously. So we're just starting the process. I think the Post Audit and Oversight Committee is really going to be taking a look at this, and I think it's going to be an issue that we're going to grapple with, really, I think, for the rest of the term. Not necessarily the individuals there, but the larger issue of if there were benefits that were accrued to folks that should not have been, we can use this as a mechanism to try to, you know, to tackle those particular issues and do so. So, you know, it's funny. I just got a call from this afternoon from Greta Van Susteren of Fox News. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. She called my office. I didn't talk to her. I'm sure she didn't call my office, but her people did. And I said, no, I can't do it. I got to do ATD tonight. So,
what I mean, how much feedback have you been getting? How much?
That's true.
That's very nice.
Man, you're really trying to get on Kevin's good side.
I know.
See, I'm no holds bar. I don't care what side I'm on. Although I am on the same side of the table right now.
At the moment. So I throw you on the other side. But what kind of feedback have you been getting from any of your constituents in regards to this news that you know, the perpetrators of over, what, 180 folks who got injured?
Over 200 now.
Oh, is it over 200 now?
They said 260 were officially treated.
The numbers are all over the place, but more than 200 people involved. You're talking about four people who were, you know, three who were, you know, killed part of the bombing, one who was killed in the, you know, during the chase. What are you hearing from constituents about this?
Oh, yeah, I got some folks. I believe the day this story broke, I think it was a Thursday maybe or Friday, I can't recall. I got a number of emails and calls from folks who were outraged, you know, about that. That's why I was pleased, to his credit, our chairman of our post-audit committee, he was right out there, and he was saying the same kind of things. And thankfully, you know, we have the power to actually make some change and force some changes and force the administration to release some of those documents. So I definitely agree that, you know, it's something that we got to be out in front on.
Okay. Did you have a question?
Well, I was just going to ask, take 1 second and just ask, you know, we're hearing now that the, you know, the FBI and the CIA possibly had opportunities to, you know, arrest these suspects or stop, you know, them from doing, possibly doing what, they ended up doing. Do you think, in your opinion, and anyone else can chime in your opinion, do you think the FBI, CIA, Homeland Security dropped the ball on this one?
Good question. I don't want to judge it at this point. I mean, I think there's definitely some looks like there's been some mistakes made. But, the investigation is ongoing, and I don't want to jump on that. Let law enforcement do its job. Yep.
I think if we're being warned by the Russians about somebody, we should pay very close attention. If the Russians are warning us,
yes.
I think we should pay close attention.
Should we trust the Russians?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we're the section, they came from Chechnya, and the Russians...
Well, Dagestan, I don't think they ever really lived in Chechnya.
Well, the Russians have their own issues with that section of the area. So,
this all feels so 1980s.
Boris and Natasha.
Red Dawn,
Well, I bet you somebody, I believe somebody's on the line who could probably refer to that. Senator, are you back for 4 seconds?
Yeah, I don't get any intro music when I call in to ask.
No. No, you're just a normal caller. What's your?
We're not going to talk about Aerosmith, are we?
We were hesitant to even put you on.
Well, Joe was hesitant. Joe's a little...
I don't want to spot my freshman colleague, but I'm dying to ask a question.
I just was saying all kinds of nice things about you, too.
He just started listening.
I'm going to ask you some insight into your chairman. I serve on the Senate Post Audit Committee, and I appreciate the fact that Linsky's actually stepped up on this issue because... I think it's information the public should have. Obviously with the public benefits that these guys were receiving, these alleged bombers and his family and their family. But here's my question. Once they get the information and it's disseminated, which is evidently being done now by the House Post Audit Committee, what do you think that the chairman, David Linsky, is then going to do with the information?
What's
the point?
Once the committee gets all the documents?
Yeah.
Well, I think our post audit staff is going to go through them all, make sure that right. and the committee members will be going through them as well.
Let me rephrase the question.
Sure.
So once we determine that these guys had all kinds of public benefit, were on welfare, had EBT cards, whatever, the mother, the father, everybody. The mother was probably working under the table with her cosmetology thing and, working out of her house. I'm assuming they probably received, there's 200, 300 pages of documents. They're probably on...
500 so far.
500. Well, they're probably, receiving a fair amount of public tax dollars in public benefits. So once we have all that information disseminated, what's the end game? Are we going to try to... Yeah. Enact some reforms based on that information? Because to date, Chairman Linsky has voted against EBT reforms. He's voted against screening applicants for public housing. We've got illegals living in public housing, not only here on the South Shore, but throughout the state. So what are we going to do with the information once we disseminate it?
Well, that was a big question with a lot of speculation and in it. But let me say this. The end game is that, there's a twofold issue here. One is the immediate issue of what these terrorists, what kind of assistance they were getting, and if that information needs to get to law enforcement and investigators, then it needs to go. The second end game is just a bigger picture of if there were loopholes in the system that we haven't identified up until now, and we can use this case as a way to close those loopholes, then we should. And I think we certainly have taken some positive steps. The House just, in fact, changed our law, and hopefully you guys in the Senate will do the same to mandate photo IDs on EBT cards. So we have taken some positive steps. I'm getting the go sign from Kevin here that we're out of time.
I will close and just say this, guys. We don't even ask people for their Social Security numbers to get state-subsidized public housing if the person doesn't want to give it. And we've got illegals living in state-subsidized public housing, and we can't get that reform done. So I'm skeptical.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.